This is Fresh Air. In 1981, Dan Rather moved into the anchor chair at CBS Evening News. He replaced America's best-loved anchor, Walter Cronkite, who virtually owned the top-rated spot among network news shows. Rather came to the job with a reputation as a combative reporter. He was in Dallas when President Kennedy was shot and was the first to report that he had died. Rather covered the civil rights movement, was in Vietnam during the war, and was the chief White House correspondent during Watergate. Dan Rather has just written a memoir of his boyhood in Texas called I Remember. Over the past few days, some people have said that televising the latter part of the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings turned them into a circus. Rather says, as painful as the hearings were to watch, it was important for the American public to see them. But he expressed concerns about how the White House and Senate handled the confirmation process.
Well, I think cynicism is a real problem. I am dedicated to the proposition that a good journalist must be skeptical, but never cynical. The same thing, I think, applies certainly the dangers of cynicism, and perhaps even in larger, more important quantity, does it apply to our political process. That part of what's happened to the political process is deepening cynicism. You say, oh, well, listen, cynicism's been a part of politics since before the ancient Greeks, and I would say, yes, that's true. But you can reach a point where it's too pervasive. It penetrates too deeply. And what the events of surrounding this Supreme Court nomination say to me is I think we're very near that point or perhaps beyond it. Let me give you an example. Let me pause and say this is personal opinion clearly labeled. When President Bush said that Clarence Thomas was the best qualified person in America for this Senate seat, I think it unleashed, rightly or wrongly, justifiably or otherwise, it unleashed a good deal of cynicism. And that can build on itself. Frankly, there's plenty of blame to go around in this whole mess, and I do not exclude journalists from our part in what turned out to be a debacle. But a lot of it has to do with cynicism. Cynicism in appointments, cynicism in the approval or disapproval process, and yes, some cynicism in the press. And I only hope that we can sort of crawl back to some level where there's skepticism, but not cynicism, in everything from the nomination itself through the process and through the coverage of the process.
I believe on Saturday, CBS had a game that it had to go to. Were you frustrated that CBS couldn't do complete coverage of the hearings on Saturday because of the game?
No, frustration is not the word. Listen, I'm a reporter. I'm a lifetime reporter, and I always want news to take precedent. But I understood well before we began covering the hearings and all during the hearings that we had that is, CBS Incorporated, not CBS News, but CBS Incorporated, had a legally binding contract to cover sports events. Unfortunately, these sports events coincided with these very important hearings. And while I certainly wish that it could have been otherwise and left strictly to myself, probably would have tried to make some other call, I understood that it was a legally binding contract and we had to do it. And also, I work at CBS and I'm loyal to CBS.
I want to ask you about an incident that I'm sure a lot of our listeners remember, and I'm sure it's something you've been asked about a lot. I'm thinking of the 1988 interview that you did live with then-Vice President George Bush, who was a candidate for president at the time. CBS had been negotiating with Bush to do an interview, for you to do an interview with him, and I believe it was Bush's idea to have the interview live. What did you think were the advantages and the disadvantages to you and to him by going live?
Well, first, the main advantage to us for going live, it's the only way we could get the interview.
That was the condition.
That was a condition of the interview. It was not our preference, but we considered it carefully and said, well, there are risks in doing the interview live. And I fully understood then, and I understand now, that there are people who say, oh, well, you should never do an interview live. But it was the only way we could get the interview. I thought it was important that we interview the vice president and candidate for the presidency. So we made a judgment. We took our chances. We went live with it. Then and now, I'm proud of the fact that we did.
What did you think were the greatest risks to you
Well, there's always, to me, I don't think of risk to myself.
Well, a risk to the program.
A risk to the program is that there's always a risk of filibuster that with any political candidate, that if you do it live, that the candidate tries to filibuster through whatever time he thinks you may have and not answer the questions.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll look rude if you keep interrupting.
And not be seen answering the questions. Well, I am at peace with anyone who actually saw and heard the interview or has taken the time to go back and take a look at the videotape of the interview. Look, like anyone else, I make my mistakes. I'd like to think that I'm not a rude person. I was not rude in that interview.
Oh, I didn't say you were rude.
No. I wasn't taking offense. I was just saying, you know, you said, well, or appear to be rude, I think you said, if you ask the questions. Now, frankly, I was surprised by many things in the interview. One of the things I wanted to do in the interview was try to get the answer to the question, how was it that the Ayatollah Khomeini had killed 242 of our very best young men, most of the Marines, in the Beirut barracks? He murdered them. He killed them, 242. And then we learn that we immediately after that began sending thousands of our best, most sophisticated missiles to the Ayatollah. Now, it was an unexplained, I couldn't understand it, and I had known George Bush for many years, and frankly, I thought he would come with an explanation. So one of the things I wanted to do in the interview is get the explanation for him of why we were doing this. He didn't have an answer. He did his job as he saw it as a candidate for president. He tried to avoid the question. I think I did my job as a reporter, which was to keep asking the question, either until I got an answer or that it was clear that he wasn't going to answer the question. Now, one can argue about whether I did a good job or a poor job of it, but that's what I was trying to do.
Dan Rather is my guest, and he's written a memoir about his youth. It's called I Remember. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. We're talking with CBS News anchor Dan Rather about his now famous live interview with presidential candidate George Bush in 1988. I think it's fair to say that Bush tried to make it seem like you were almost ambushing him to get him to talk about Iran-Contra and that you were being unfair in your line of questioning. There was a lot of speculation after this interview that the goal of the White House in this interview was to show that George Bush was not a wimp. He could really stand up to Dan Rather live on television.
Well, I don't believe that.
Did you think that was the ultimate goal?
No, I didn't. First of all, having said that I knew George Bush for a long time, I don't think anybody who knew George Bush had what you describe in their mind. I don't think it was even a very viable factor in the campaign. It could very well be that President Bush's handlers thought he was weak or unable to handle things. I didn't come there to ambush anybody. I'm aware that for their own partisan, political, and in some cases ideological purposes, there was an effort made by those around the vice president, whether he was involved himself or not, I don't know, to convince people that an ambush had been planned. For example, Time magazine suckered for that story in an almost unbelievable way, led by, I'm told, a man who was supposed to be covering the campaign for Time magazine, who later became the press spokesman in a high place in the administration. So I have to ask myself, what was going on then? And you know what? I didn't know then, and I don't know now. I know that I walked in to that interview trying to do my best as a lifetime professional reporter to ask questions and to be professional. I did my best to do so.
Was CBS punished by the White House after your interview with George Bush?
The direct answer to that is yes. I pause only because I'm not sure punishment is the right word, that we paid a price for it.
What was the
price?
Before
we move to what the price was, it's very important to me that you understand, the audience understands. I have no complaints. It goes with the territory. Now, you say, what was the price? Among the price, if you will go back and check, in the last week of the campaign, there were two big interviews given with the candidate for president, Vice President George Bush. They were given to our competitors. They were not given to CBS News. CBS News was shut out in the last week of the campaign. You can check the record that since election as president, that President Bush has given interviews to, I think, every major over-the-air news broadcasting organization, there's been one notable exception, notable to me at least, and that has been CBS News. Again, no complaints. This goes with the territory. The message has been, when I covered City Hall, state legislature, the Congress, and the White House in years past, the message always is, if you come with independence, if you try to be an independent reporter and engage in independent coverage, sooner or later, partisan politicians and or ideologues will try to make you pay the price. It goes with the territory. That's part of what being a reporter is about.
Do you think that that technique is effective in getting reporters to go easy on politicians?
Yes, the record is very clear. It's one of the things that's happened with American journalism in recent years. The message from the politicians, and by the way, this is whether, generally speaking, whether the Democrats, Republicans, mugwumps or whatever, is you give me favorable coverage, you give that to me and you'll get yours. You'll get the big interview or I'll put in a good word with your boss or who knows, as was the case with the Time magazine man I mentioned, you may even get a job with the administration when we get elected. Now, for many years, the mainstream of American journalism set a standard that said, you only have one client. This is the journalism I was reared on. You only have one client. The client is the viewer or the listener, that person in the living room or driving along the car who's depending on you to bring independent journalism, independent reportage to them. Your job is not to be curry favor. Now, there's been a shift in the last 10 or 12 years that even with some of our finest newspapers and even with some of our best broadcast organizations, the standard has become your first job, Mr. Reporter, is to be popular with the person you are covering or the institution or group. That's a major shift in journalism, and I do think that shift has taken place. I'm hopeful that the shift is not permanent and it won't last long.
Is there a specific story that you think the American public missed out on because of this emphasis on favorable courage to curry favor?
I think the overall story of our economy is probably the best example, the best running example. And again, I want to make it clear that I think in many ways this applies to those covering Democrats as well as to Republicans. Look, the economic situation has been and is in some ways of more concern, has deeper problems than has generally been reported. So I think that's one example. I think there have been other examples. I think the 1988 political campaign, and I do not accept myself, I do not accept CBS News, that in general, coverage in the 1988 political campaign was spineless, gutless, and thoughtless. And that's not something we as journalists can be proud of. And I place the most responsibility for that on those newspapers and broadcast organizations that over the years and through their history have set the highest standards for quality and excellence. I think in many ways we let ourselves down in 1988.
Dan Rather is my guest. You know what I think a lot of Americans have become skeptical about? Anchors going on location during a crisis. Examples would include the San Francisco earthquake and more recently the war in the Gulf. And I'm sure you heard a lot of people talking, you know, cynically about the TV anchors getting into their Banana Republic clothes and flying into the Gulf to be there for the war. What's your impression about when it's appropriate for an anchor to be on location, and why is it important that an anchor be there?
Well, first, let me deal with your premise that the talk about, quote, being in Banana Republic clothes, unquote. I generally hear that mostly, if not entirely, from other journalists who are envious that you get to go someplace or you get to go to the cutting edge of a story. I don't hear many of our viewers or listeners talking about it. Now, as to the question of why one wants to go, listen, being a reporter is the only thing I've ever wanted to do in my life. Never thought about being an anchor man. Never even thought about being in broadcasting. And you can say, well, you're a long way from that now, and that's true. But I think of myself professionally as a reporter first and then an anchor person. What kind of reporter would I be if I said, listen, we're going to send maybe 750,000 of our sons and daughters and brothers and husbands and wives and our best young people to fight a war 10,000 miles away from home, but I'm not going to go see it and report it firsthand as best I can? I don't think I would have been worthy of the title reporter, which I consider the best title I have. I wouldn't be worthy of the name of journalist. much less anchor, if I didn't do that.
Dan Rather. He's written a new memoir about growing up in Texas. It's called I Remember. This is Fresh Air.